Well, tonight we're still in our Wonderful Words of Life series. We started just a few weeks ago. And today we're going to be looking at a great verse about suffering. And it is very necessary for us to do this because there's so much suffering in our world. Some of you have gotten to know Alexis Judy. She's been fellowshipping with us for a couple of months now with her family. And I'll have her tell her whole story one of these days. It's a great story. So here she is. I'm talking about her. She was only 16 years old, and she was diagnosed with cancer. And it was a really big deal, you know. It was a shock. She's just a kid, and you get news like that. And it is life-changing. There's just a lot of suffering in the world. So someday I'll have her tell us her story. But just know that suffering is always just around the corner for all of us. I'm so glad that many of you have not had a lot of suffering in your life. And, you know, that's wonderful. God bless you. But that's the thing about living in the world. Jesus says, in the world you shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I've overcome the world. So suffering is just part of what we do. And it's really great to have a sturdy theology of suffering so that when the suffering comes, you're not blown off course. You're not knocked off balance. So today, looking at this great line from Job 23, and read it with me. But he knoweth the way that I take. When he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. Well, obviously, we're in the book of Job. That's one of Job's own speeches. And let me give you just a little bit of background here. So when we talk about suffering, you can see where we are in Job's story. I know you know this, but just in case, his family has died. His wealth has been taken away. His wife has turned against him, saying, why don't you curse God and die? And he now has boils on his skin. He's very, very sick, and he's very bereaved. And so in that context, we have this statement. He says he will come forth as gold. He's responding to Eliphaz. There are like these three cycles of dialogue in the book of Job. And so each of the friends will say something, and then Job responds. Another something, and Job responds. And then that's one set when they've been through all four friends, all three friends, and Job is the fourth. Then you do it again. And then you have the second cycle, and one more time, the third cycle. This is the third cycle, and Eliphaz has just said something, and so now it's Job's turn to reply back. In the second bullet there, you see, Job is wishing that he could just ask God about what is happening to him. And that's the thing. So often, I think you relate to that, right? So often you think, if I could just talk to God, if I could just sit down with him for a few minutes and say, are we okay here? You know, what's going on? If I could just talk with him. And that's what Job is appealing for in verse 3. Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come even to his seat. I would order my cause before him. I'd fill my mouth with arguments. Behold, I go forward, but he's not there, and backward, but I cannot perceive him. On the left hand, where he does work, but I cannot behold him. He hides himself on the right hand. I cannot see him. So I just want to see God. If he could just tell me what's going on, I'd be okay. But he doesn't tell me. And so the frustration, that's what he wishes for. And all that's in that context. When he has tried me, I shall come forth as gold. The third bullet there, Job reiterates his ultimate faith in God's care and wisdom, which is just a beautiful thing in the same context that we're looking at. He says in verse 10, he knows the way that I take. When he's tried me, I will come forth as gold. So he's really a man of faith, even though he's crying out in anguish. If only God would talk to me. But you can see he's got a sturdy faith, and he knows that the Lord is aware of his situation and is carrying through it. And then lastly, the last bullet there, Job reviews his lifelong devotion to God. And this is really beautiful too. In verse 11, my foot has held his steps. I've always tried to follow the Lord. My foot has held his steps. His way have I kept and not declined. I'm doing what he wants me to do. In verse 12, neither have I gone back from the commandment of his lips. I have esteemed the words of his mouth more than my necessary food. I've always loved the Lord. I've tried to follow him, and that's where he is. So all of that is in this context of he knows the way that I take. When he's tried me, I'll come forth as gold. So that's the chapter. That's the context of this. And there are three great ideas in verse 10. And we want to look at them all because when you're going through a hard time, every one of these is golden. So the first great idea is that God is attentively watching my suffering. If I'm suffering, God is really on top of it. You know, he's attentively watching. And that's what we get from the opening of verse 10. He knows the way that I take. He knows the path that I'm in. And so the first bullet point there. The pain of suffering is intensified if we believe God is aloof, distracted, or preoccupied with other things. If he's not really paying attention. So when you have pain in your life, that pain is really going to escalate if you are not convinced that the Lord knows the path that you're on. If you're not convinced that the Lord is paying attention. If you're afraid that he's distracted or aloof or preoccupied with other matters, you know, the big matters of the universe, not paying attention to you with your very small world, then your pain is just going to be off the charts. Because as long as you think that the Lord is distracted or preoccupied elsewhere, you're going to feel the aloneness, the isolation, the vulnerability. And that's the worst thing of all. You know, if we made a deal with you that between now and tomorrow at bedtime, you're just going to be in excruciating pain, just awful. But if you bear up under that well, then you'll never be sick or bereaved or in pain again. But you're going to have a rough 24 hours. All of you would sign up for that. Okay, you know, have a rough 24 hours. But then after that, no more sickness, no more pain, no more loss of loved ones. You know, I'm not going to lose my children. I'm not going to lose my wife. I'm not going to lose my friends. Sure, I'll do that. I'll do that all day long, 24 hours. Sure. Well, that's because you believe that when you come to the end, there is a reward, that it makes sense, that there is a supervision of this, in this case, by God. God is supervising this. And as long as you think God is supervising it, you're going to be okay. But if the thought occurs to you that God is not supervising your pain, that God is not paying attention, he does not know the path that you're in, if that crosses your mind and eventually becomes the fixation of your mind, then you're in really, really big trouble. Because equal pain otherwise is now going to be radically unequal if you begin to believe that God's not paying attention. And the second bullet at the bottom of that slide, the pain of suffering is greatly relieved if we believe that God is belaying, holding the ropes while we climb the cliff. So if you do rock climbing, if you've been to the rock gym, you know what this is. There's a guy named the belayer, and he has the ropes, usually a rope with top rope. It loops around from the ceiling. And the belayer is belaying with the rope. And if you fall because, you know, you're reaching up for a handhold and you missed it and you lost your balance and you fall, you're just going to swing down gently because you have a belayer. Well, as long as you know you have a belayer, you don't mind being 40 feet high on a rock face and taking a chance and trying to get a handhold. And if you fail, no big deal. You have a belayer. He's going to rock you down, back and forth, whatever. It's going to be a soft landing, and you take care of business again. But if you did not have a belayer, well, that changes rock climbing considerably. And some people do free climb, but that is crazy. I mean, if you're just going to climb a rock face without a belayer, that's just suicidal in many cases. And oftentimes, even the best guys fall and die. It's very, very dangerous. It changes the complexion of the problem. And that's what suffering does. If God is holding your ropes, and you think, all right, I'm out on a limb here. I'm even on a skinny limb here. These are really skinny limbs. But I'm top roped. God has me. And if I fall, it's going to be okay. And if you realize that the Lord is holding the ropes, that is just going to bring tremendous relief in any time of pain. So have you had this experience? You know what I'm talking about? Have you ever felt like God is holding the ropes or God is not holding the ropes? This is like mission critical for your pain level when you're going through suffering. I have had several times in my life, and in some ways, my whole life, when you're trying to sacrifice, when you're trying to make a difference, when you're working hard, and in order to make a difference, you do have to sometimes crawl out on those skinny branches. To think that the Lord cares, that the Lord is watching, He knows the path that you're taking, if that assurance settles over your heart, you think, okay, well, you know what? We're going to be okay in this. And I'm sure that you've done that with jobs. You've done that with money. You've done that with relationships. You just have to say, okay, God, well, here we go. You got the ropes? Because if you have the ropes, then I'm going to take a chance on this handhold way over here. And we'll just see. If I catch it, then I catch it. And if not, then you have to catch me. And that totally changes your suffering. That just makes all the difference. Josiah. Yeah. When Teresa and I were moving to Virginia from Arizona, it was just a pretty awful van ride. The van was overloaded and all the tires kept popping. We were coming across on Labor Day weekend and or maybe a few days before Labor Day. No, just after Labor Day. And the roads in Oklahoma were smoking hot. It was like 100 degrees outside, and these roads were just, you know, off the leash. And so we're heavily loaded, and the tires are squatting under the weight. And we go down there, and I was like, there goes another one. And we had, I don't even know, I'm pretty sure 5 flat tires, something like that. And so I was on the side of the road one time changing one of these tires, and this guy... Oh, and it's nice to have a little assurance every once in a while that, you know, the Lord is there, that he cares about what you're going through. So I'm changing one of the tires, and this guy comes rolling up, and he said, I'm sorry. Oh, because the van still had the church name on it from Arizona, so he could see it was a, you know, it was a Christian family. So he pulls up. He says, I'm sorry. I'm actually just taking my wife to a doctor's appointment, and we're going to be late. I can't stay here and help you, but I just, you know, felt badly for you. And here, and he gave me $100 just to, I don't know, just to be a nice guy, and drove away. I thought, well, thanks, Lord. I guess you know the way that I take. You know, this is pretty weird. I don't think I've ever had 5 flat tires before, but okay, we'll just keep going. And as long as you think the Lord has the ropes, you're okay. But if you think he doesn't, then everything becomes really scary and painful. Desi. Well, I'm sure it's something like that. The Lord, of course, in this book will eventually appear to him. Maybe that had happened before in his life. If not, then there's this, you know, strong oral tradition of people who would sit around the campfire and tell God stories. You know, this time the Lord helped me keep my family from starving, and this time the Lord saved me when I fell in the river and I almost drowned. And there just must have been a lot of stories like that, maybe even in Job's own life. Maybe he was the boy who almost drowned in the river. So we don't know. You know, there's so little information about his total life. But yeah, there must have just been experiences with God shared back and forth among friends. And it's pretty great, though. He had strong faith. There was a hand here once. Dawn. Yeah. Keep going on that. What do you mean? She's talking about consequences for the choices we make. Yes. So Donna is saying, what if you spend all of your money and now you don't have enough to pay your bills and they foreclose on your house? You have insecurity and uncertainty. Isn't that your fault? Isn't God allowing that to happen? And of course, I think it is. But Dawn, even in that, if we liken that to the punishments that our parents gave us. You know, for example, let's say that we're grounded. It never, for most of us who come up in more or less loving homes. It never occurs to us when we're being grounded that our parents don't pay attention to us, that they are hateful toward us, that they're wishing us to just go away or to die. I mean, if we had nurturing parents, it never even occurs to us. We know that they're watching us in time out, in grounding, whatever we're talking about. And we know that as they watch us, they care about us, and so it's okay. And, you know, the truth is, as long as I might lose my house someday. I actually am mortgage free, but I'm in debt for some college loans for my kids. Well, someday that could come back to cause me to lose my house. If that were to happen, as long as I know God knows and God cares, I'm okay. But if I thought that there was not a God who cares about me, who knows my situation, then I would be very uncomfortable with that. Yeah. And that God this whole time is looking at you like one of his daughters with care and concern, and he's just going to take care of you even if you have to go through, you know, a bankruptcy or whatever we're talking about. So we said there are three great ideas. The first one is just that the Lord really knows. He does know. He is paying attention. He's not aloof. He's not remote. He's not far away. All right, so the second idea that really is striking here is that when he has tried me, I shall come forth as gold. And what we're saying is that there is a sensible process, not a random process, a sensible process at work in my suffering, so that none of the suffering is a waste of time. There is a sensible process at work. It's not random. It is sensible, sent by a God who does love us and who does know. So in the first bullet point there, suffering for a great gain is very different than meaningless suffering, the kind that comes as the ultimate wage of sin or in the rebellion of the devil. So let's just say that over in India in 1850, some mother takes her little daughter by the hand and turns her into the Hindu temple, which was done all the time, you know. And then that little girl is going to be abused by the temple priests, and she's going to become a Hindu prostitute. And then, after her little psyche is warped by all of this abuse, then she dies. Well, there really isn't anything great about that. She's not a child of God. She has a very, very hard life, and then she goes to hell forever. There's not much to celebrate in that story. That story is absolutely impossible for any born-again Christian, because every born-again Christian is going to have a happy ending to his story every single time without fail, and that's even if the Christian has been wayward. So there is such a thing on planet Earth as meaningless suffering, like the poor Hindu people who are going through all of this nonsense. That's meaningless suffering. It's not to say there's no meaning in the cosmic sense, that God is not going to derive glory from that. God derives glory from everything. He derives glory in rescuing at least some of those Hindu people. He derives glory in showing that the rebellion that Satan started, that the Hindu people have participated in, is going to be squashed and put down. There's glory in that. But we're talking about meaningless suffering in the sense of the Hindu girl raised as a temple prostitute and dying and going to hell. That's just meaningless from her perspective, not God's. There's meaningless suffering. It's just awful, and there's no happy note at the end. So there is meaningless suffering on planet Earth. And Job says, I know that when he's tried me, I shall come forth as gold. This is not meaningless. This is suffering that has a sensible process attached to it. And once again, that just makes all the difference in the world. If you're suffering for great gain, remember, if between now and tomorrow night you suffer with tremendous excruciating pain, but after tomorrow night you suffer not at all ever again, then you'll buy that. Because that is suffering for great gain. Well worth it. But if it's meaningless suffering, if it's just the Hindu girl in the Hindu temple, she gets old, she dies, she goes to hell. If it's just meaningless suffering, how awful. But no born-again child will ever have to worry about that. That's impossible. The second bullet point there reminds us that doing without something for the purpose of getting more is what makes the entire cosmos work in God's program for humankind. So you have to suffer by doing your homework that you don't want to do. And if you do your homework that you don't want to do, you graduate. So you suffer to gain more. You do without something, do without your hobby so you can study, so that you gain more after all. And on with all such things. You experiment and it's hard work and tedious and you take records and it doesn't work. And then one day it does work. So you experiment, you do without, you inconvenience yourself, so that there's a payoff in the end. You gain more because of all of that hard work. Practice. You take your musical instrument. You take your paints, whatever is your hobby. And you practice and you practice until you're green. And then you make something beautiful. And if there had never been the sacrifice, the doing without for practice, then there would never be the beauty of what you've created. And it's true with every aspect. We labor to get wealth. We don't necessarily love the labor, but we kind of like to eat. So we labor to get wealth. We exercise so that we'll be fit and healthy. We sacrifice in order to love people because the love is so important to us, so rewarding. It's what makes the world go round. And so in all of God's ways, we find that you do without in order to gain. That's just the way God made the universe work. And Job says, I know that I'm going to do without. When he tries me, I'm not going to love this. This is going to be a test of my mettle, my flexibility. Am I brittle or am I sturdy? He's going to test me. And when he's done testing me, I'm going to go forth as gold. I'm going to have to do without in order to gain more. And that's just how it is. So once again, if you are climbing out on a limb for Christ, if suffering has sort of swept you off your feet and dropped you to the floor, if that's what's going on, and you know in the first place that God is holding the ropes, okay, we're still okay. And you know in the second place that there's a sensible process to this. This is not meaningless. This is sensible. Then once again, you think, okay, when I go through this, then I get something more. And that takes the sting out of pain and suffering and even death. Does that raise any questions or observations? Perry. Yeah. So do you think your roommates are wayward Christians or not Christians at all? Or your friends that I'm talking to? I know you couldn't hear what Perry was saying, but just that she has friends who couldn't catch a break. You know, just one hardship after another, and very troubled about it and talking to Perry about, you know, why bad things keep happening to good people. And Perry talks about how meaningful it was for her to know that, you know, the suffering is sensible if you're following Jesus, and how hopeless they were without that same assurance. So, yeah, it's a big deal when you think that I am going through the test and then I come out better, then all right, you know. But if you think that this is just random, this is just happening to me, if I didn't have any bad luck, I wouldn't have any luck at all. If that's what it comes to, then the pain of suffering is just overwhelming. Desi and then Dawn. Yeah, that's what you're saying. As long as you can factor in eternity and know that even if things go very badly here in this life, there is another world, then you're okay. You have to see it, though, without that. It's desperate. Dawn. You know, you have just made a beautiful transition for me for this slide. Don was saying, so everything is a test? No. And yes. There are three great reasons for suffering. And a lot of times, your suffering is probably going to have these mixed together in some way. So it would be a suffering cocktail. You have three things going on, or two out of three, or whatever. But there are three main reasons for suffering as a child of God. The first one is the chastening of the Lord that arrests us in our sin. Stop it. You know, that's the Lord saying, stop it. And sometimes that's no fun. This is Dawn saying you spent all your money on foolishness. Now you can't pay your bills. Now there's foreclosure. And the Lord says, do I have your attention now? You know, can you hear me now? The Lord might say, are you listening now? You hear that? And sometimes that's the case. So that's a very good reason for suffering. Number two, this could be the pruning that just increases our productivity. So in John chapter 15, the vine and the branches and the ones that are bringing forth fruit are pruned back so they give even more fruit. And so you weren't doing anything wrong. That's not chastening. You're doing a good job. But because of this new hardship, now you're going to do a better job. So of the two, I think you want the second one so far. That's just a shame. F.B. Meyer sometimes talks about how awful that we force God to bring hardship into our lives by our own foolishness and sin. Much better if it's number two. We're doing a good job, and the Lord says, now I'm going to help you do even a better job. So that's two. Number three, there's a showcasing of us who are loyal children that brings God glory in the world. And this is the very, very best one. This is where Paul says, we are made a spectacle to the world and to angels and to men. So the whole world, including angels and men, your spectacle, a theater production. And that's the very best one. And obviously, you know, that's what's happening in the book of Job, because Job is on display before the devil and his angels and God and his angels. And the whole thing is a theater. It is to give God glory by the way Job is loyal, even when it's hard to be loyal. So what we have here is a short list of great reasons to suffer. So Dawn, let's do it this way. If I am sinning and the Lord arrests me with his chastening, can you hear me now? That's great. Because that would say still that the Lord knows the path that I am in. He's been paying attention to me, and now he's going to arrest me because I wasn't doing a good job. So he does know the path that I'm taking, and it is a test. I am going to come forth as gold. The Lord is going to light a fire under me, and you know the deal with gold, right? The impurities, they'll rise to the top of the kettle. You can scrape those off, and when you're all done, you look in the kettle and you have a mirror, a gold mirror. You see your reflection as plain and clear as it could possibly be. So, that's a test. The Lord is going to put me through the fire of chastening, and I'm going to get better. That's a test. Number two, there's a pruning, and pruning isn't exactly a test. It could be. But pruning is, you haven't been doing anything particularly wrong. We're just going to make you better than ever. And that's good. So the Lord brings hardship into your life. In the last slide, we'll talk about how those hardships change us. But the Lord says, in essence, you're doing a good job, and I'm going to make you better. And that's good. Not exactly a test, but you might call it a test. It could be. What I'm trying to get away from, and you really see it strongest in number three, almost every Christian's cliche response to suffering is, the Lord is trying to teach me something. Well, I'm sure that's true. I'm sure that the Lord is always trying to teach us something. So, you know, in and of itself, that's not bad. But it's not good if we get stuck there, because particularly for number three, the idea is not so much that the Lord is trying to teach us something, it's that the Lord is trying to show something to the rest of the world. In other words, he's trying to teach the rebels something. In the book of Job, the devil and his followers are going to learn a little something, that people do follow God and love him. And then Eliphaz and Bildad and all the friends, including young Elihu, who's the best. He's going to learn something. But I don't think the main thing was for Job to learn something. I'm sure he did learn something. I know he learned something. But the main thing that's happening there is he's a spectacle to the world and to angels and to men. When the Apostle Paul is talking about all of his sufferings, he said, I think God has appointed us last, as it were, appointed unto death. We're made a spectacle to the whole world, including angels and men. It's not really for Paul to learn anything precisely, although I'm sure he's always learning, so are we all. But the main thing is not that we're learning something. So is it a test in every case? I suppose you could call it that. But the reason we suffer, I mean, there's more than one reason, but the reasons, plural, for suffering are wonderful as long as God knows the path that you're in. He's paying attention. He's superintending this whole thing. And his process is sensible. It's not just out of the clear blue sky. He's doing something in your life, like chastening, pruning, showcasing. It's sensible. And then, last of all, we're going to see that we become better people, which, of course, is wonderful. Well, okay, so we said there were three great ideas in this little statement in Job 23:10. This one is, I shall come forth as gold, and so we're calling that, I am being improved by my suffering. I'm being improved. Gold, of course, is valuable to God in the world. You know, this kind of gold, the trying of your faith being much more precious than gold that perishes. So this kind of gold is valuable to God in the world, but its value is dependent on when I am tried, you know, purified. So if we're always just going to be filthy, then we don't shine very well. That's the thing with precious metals. They have to be pure or they don't shine very well. So you've got to go through the purifying process. The second bullet there, in the right environment, suffering can burn some of the sin away from my personality. For example, if I think I'm a hotshot athlete, then when I get back pain and knee pain, I suddenly don't have very much athletic pride. I feel a little humiliated. If I think that I'm devilishly beautiful, and then I get scarring, then now I realize the vanity, the passing nature of beauty. If I become poor, suddenly I don't try to keep up with the Joneses and show everybody the nice stuff I have because I'm poor. I can't keep up. So covetousness and egotism is given a big kick through my poverty. If I am bereaved of loved ones, then sometimes that cures me of idolizing the important people in my life. I just can't go on without you. You're my everything. Well, that's the talk that's supposed to be reserved for God. So now I'm bereaved and I don't talk that way anymore. And sometimes it has more the idea of earthbound thinking. I never wanted to think about heaven. Can't remember the context in which I heard this, but somebody had a beautiful estate and no particular obligations to work. They worked at whatever they enjoyed. If they want to paint a picture, they paint a picture. And when it came time for them to die, they said, it's very hard to leave all of this. That's earthbound thinking. Now you're so attached to the earth, you can't even imagine living for things that are invisible and forever. So if I'm impoverished, suddenly earthbound thinking is a lot less attractive because I want to exit here as fast as I can, at least in some cases of suffering. Rejection can burn away self-confidence. You think, well, I want to be around these people make me feel good, and now all of a sudden, uh-oh, I just found out what they were saying about me on the phone. I just happened to get an email about what they were saying about me. Somebody told me what the conversation was when I left the room. I feel so rejected. That's suffering. That's really awful. But sometimes that rejection ends up knocking down your self-confidence And remember, we don't want you to have self-confidence, right? We want you to have God confidence. And it's good that you get knocked off that self-confidence, because that's holding you back. You just want to trust the Lord with your life and not trust yourself. So in all of those ways, the suffering is actually wiping off some of the filth in our personalities. Why do we want all this, you know, vanity about beauty and vanity about athletic ability and vanity about how healthy I am and how strong I am and how smart I am and how charming I am and the people are around me and I have so much money and so many nice things. Everybody look at my stuff. And sometimes you go through suffering, it just wipes all that filth off your personality. You start to glow a little bit better. And that's well worth it. The last thing, all of this improvement of character makes us more valuable and rewardable in the service of God. So a conclusion. By the way, here are the 3 points recapped. God is attentively watching my suffering. He knows the way that I take. My suffering is sensible, not random. When he tries me, I'll come forth as gold. It's not random, it's sensible. And 3, I am improved by this. I come forth as gold. So now, the conclusion. Not for nothing do we suffer as Christians. The poor Hindu people, they're suffering for nothing. They're suffering for the glory of God. But as far as they go, they're suffering for nothing. That is meaningless. You are not a Hindu. You are a born-again Christian. That means your suffering can never be for nothing. Whether my suffering as a child of God is mainly for chastening, pruning, or showcasing, God is deeply involved in it with me. His decision to put me in that position is both wise and caring, and I will someday be glad that I went through it. And that's what takes the sting out of the hardships that you face in life. And that's why Job's statement is so precious. He knows the way that I take. When he's tried me, I'll come forth as gold. And that's a great idea. In chapter 23, verse 10.